Hello, everybody, and welcome to the John Henry Show for this Wednesday afternoon. Of course, we did not go live yesterday due to the Democratic debates, which started at the same time I usually do. So we have got a lot of things to talk about today. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's see. First things we wanted to discuss, obviously, you can find me at johnhenry.us. JohnHenry.us on Facebook at JohnHenry.us and on I Loved to Wake Up in the Morning When Barack Obama Was President. Twitter at JohnHenry_US. YouTube right here. Fundraising pages are PayPal.me/JohnHenry.us. Patreon.com/JohnHenry. That Patreon should be live within the next day or two. And of course, the audio podcast is available through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and wherever fine podcasts are sold. So getting right into some news today, at the top of the show here, I just wanted to take a couple of notes. First, author Clive Cussler, who is a very popular novelist, and his work tends to involve, you know, deep sea boats and things like that, and you know, semi-military or paramilitary activity and research and stuff. Passed away today. Incredibly popular author. For me personally, I wouldn't say he's on my top 10, but certainly an author whose work I've read, and he will be missed. In a more serious and frankly depressing news, there has been another mass shooting today in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at the Miller Coors plant there. And this plant is actually just about 3 miles north of where I lived when I lived in Milwaukee in 1988. And so I'm kind of familiar with the area. I've been past this place multiple times and so on and so forth. There are some conflicting reports about the number of casualties in that attack. The best information that I can find is a local channel, WISN, Channel 12, who has been told by witnesses that there were 7 dead, including the shooter. I am not going to go into a big diatribe related to gun control, mass shootings, and so on and so forth at this point. Pardon me. However, certainly my thoughts are with the families, and my heartfelt condolences go out to all of them. And we hope that we can continue working and moving forward in this country to find a way to both accommodate the reasonable needs of the Second Amendment and find some kind of common sense gun control restrictions, and hopefully prevent this sort of thing from continuing to happen. So beyond that, we have, let's talk about last night's debate. What a mess that was. Holy cow. I don't think anybody came off great. Quite frankly, I doubt very much that Sanders hurt himself in any way. It was kind of funny watching Michael Bloomberg almost confess on a live camera that he bought multiple legislators. Joe Biden is increasingly bitter as his poll numbers go down. Elizabeth Warren did her thing as she does. Same with Amy Klobuchar. This Steyer fella, I mean, he talked a lot, but he's got no chance at all. And frankly, I don't even know why he was there. One of the things that I wanted to kind of get into today is, you know, conspiracy theorism and just bad information and paranoia. Already today, we are seeing a lot of people who are trying to say, oh, well, obviously Biden and Bloomberg bought the crowd and so on and so forth. There's an argument to be made, and I'm going to make it, that money played a part, and the audience was pretty limited and pretty well tailored to Bloomberg and Biden by that limitation. But that's also a long, long way from suggesting that they somehow papered the crowd or packed the crowd deliberately through an overt act with intent by either candidate or their campaigns. Now, the the legitimate issue behind this, which Sanders mentioned in a post-debate stand-up interview real quick, is that in order to even get in the hall, or in order to get into the front, at least into the bottom tier of the hall, the local Democratic Party in Charleston, South Carolina, was charging people a minimum of $1,750. Okay, and I wasn't aware of this when we started watching the debates. It came out later, and it certainly explains some things. Primarily, it explains why in the world a bunch of people in South Carolina are booing the idea of pushing back against billionaires. That just stunned me. And now that I understand that most of those people paid more for their seats than I've made in the last 4 months, it makes a little bit more sense because they are threatened very much by the rhetoric that is in play right now with regards to the ownership class, the so-called 1%, the billionaires. But I want to make this point, and I want to make it really clear, okay, especially if you're a Sanders supporter, but regardless of who you're supporting, what you're supporting, wild-eyed, hand-waving conspiracy theories are only beneficial to you and your candidate if your candidate is already a fringe nut job. If you want to get into the Alex Jones type behavior, then you better be backing a candidate who thinks and acts like that, okay? Because for me, I mean, it's not going to lower my support for Sanders, but it certainly lowers the level of respect overall I have for his base when I start seeing this stuff go up. There's a Facebook group that's local to me called Michiganders for Bernie Sanders. And some guy whose name was like Bear Being, B-E-A-R Being or something like that, posts this nonsense about, oh, well, Facebook is stopping Sanders information from getting out, blah, 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 blah. Bullshit. Facebook does not care about your ideology. Let me say that again. Facebook does not care about your ideology at all. What Facebook cares about is money. Okay? That's what they care about. And so, of course, the guy who originally posted this, after I tore him apart and explained to him that he was doing far more harm than good to the campaign by fronting these kinds of ridiculous, paranoid, self-pitying conspiracy theories, somebody else asked, well, why am I seeing so many ads for Pete, and why did Facebook say they were going to limit political speech? Let me take both of those questions one at a time, just on the off chance the person that asked them comes across this broadcast. Number one, the reason that you're seeing so much Pete content is either because their campaign is buying ads by keyword that are closely associated with your account. So, for instance, I live in Southwest Michigan, which is right up the road from South Bend, Indiana. And, of course, I'm very active in as an ally in the LGBTQ discussions. And so Facebook picks up on that through my behavior, and they put a couple little check marks next to my account. And then when the Buttigieg campaign comes along and says, oh, well, we definitely want to target people that are, locally, local to our home base, and who, have some sympathy for the LGBTQ community, then I'm going to see more Pete ads. It has nothing to do with Facebook trying to censor anybody, okay? It has to do with what my viewing habits are, what my geography is, what the people buying the advertisements think, and what my friends are posting, okay? Now, this particular user, I can only make guesses in generalities. I don't work for the Buttigieg campaign. I don't know what their social media marketing strategy is. But I do know how ad buys and sales and distribution works both for Google and for Facebook to a fairly fine point. And, that stuff is targeted towards you because their algorithms think that's what you want to see. Okay. Secondarily, if it's not their algorithms that think that's what you want to see, then somebody is buying advertisement that is keyworded to things that you do want to see or that Facebook believes that you want to see. Okay. Nobody at Facebook is interested in choking off real traffic from real people. Nobody at Facebook is interested in in you know, using their platform in some shadowy, manipulative way to you know, to put over one candidate or put down another one. What they care about is profit. That's what Facebook does. They are a business. They are an advertising company. Okay. And if it makes them money to show Bernie Sanders ads, they're going to show them. If it makes them money to show any ads, they're going to show them. Even Mark Zuckerberg in a congressional hearing testified that if Adolf Hitler bought ads, he'd sell them. Okay? They don't care about the ideology of the you know, the content that you're seeing. What they care about is whether it keeps eyeballs sticking to the page and what's the best way to make that happen, which is by creating echo chambers. And they care about how much ad revenue that they can pull in the process. Okay? So get out of this nonsense, you know, tinfoil hat, black helicopter conspiracy theory crap. Because what that's going to do more than anything else is it's going to make people who are well-reasoned and thoughtful, which, as far as I can tell, is the majority of Sanders' base. Certainly, they're not falling for the old socialism and Red Scare tactics anymore. Those people are just going to laugh at you and walk away. Right? I'm not interested in lumping myself in with a group of National Enquirer readers or Weekly World News believers. I'm sorry. I'm not interested in that. That doesn't mean I won't support Sanders. But it certainly means that I'm not interested in being in a room trying to coordinate, you know, on-the-ground activity or trying to participate in some sort of grassroots activity with people who are insane. Okay? I'm insane enough. I don't need to deal with paranoid delusions and tinfoil hats. I'm sorry. And, you know, I've put my money where my mouth is on that. I will not, out of respect for other people, name the organization, but at one point a few years ago, I was part of a fairly large political organization and was even doing some media for them. And I mentioned tinfoil hats in a close phone call. And all of a sudden, I had this woman climbing my butt because that could offend somebody. And then she went on to explain why she wears a tinfoil hat. And that was the last time I associated with that group. I will not produce media, and I will not tie my name to people who think like that. You do not need my help. You need professional help. And so I guess if the Tinfoil Hat Brigade wants to show up and you know, explain to me in the comments all of the big fears of, you know, electromagnetic fields from power lines and how the government is controlling us with HARP and chemtrails and all that other crap, go ahead and waste your time, but I'm just going to laugh at you at best. I may ignore you and delete the comments. Just because I'm not going to allow my show to be used as a vector for that bullshit. Sorry. We deal in reality here. So if you've got facts and numbers, if you've got A/B testing that shows that, you know, this candidate's information and that candidate's information, where all other things are being equal, are being somehow directly limited by Facebook, then I'll listen to that conversation. But when you're just sitting there going, oh, I don't see what I want to see, and that means they're conspiring against me, you're an asshole. Shut up and go away. Okay, you're not doing anybody any favors, and you're certainly not engendering any kind of credibility or trust among anybody with an IQ over room temperature. So, and that's another one, right? Jeez, these internet lawyers, holy cow. I said that, something about an IQ over room temperature a couple of weeks ago. Somebody goes, well, you know, if you were very smart, you would know that rooms are all kinds of things. Whoa, my God, are you kidding me? God, will someone rid me of these meddlesome trailer park lawyers that have just all these, I don't know what happened to us, man. I don't know if these are even real people or if they're scripts or if they're paid trolls working in some boiler room someplace, but who in the hell are these people that care about nothing but feeling like they won an argument on the internet? It's so pathetic and so dumb. And I have a hard time believing that there's that many of them out there. I really have a hard time believing that there are that many people in this country that are that stupid. Frankly, if I really did believe that, I think I wouldn't even bother doing this show or any of the other things I do online. I think I would just shut it down and, you know, move into Ted Kaczynski's old shack or something. Because what nonsense. What silliness. Right? And, you know, that's not to say that tables are not tilted, because they are. That is not to say that games are not rigged, because they are. Okay, but as George Carlin pointed out so eloquently, it does not require a formal conspiracy when interests converge. Okay. So if you've got a Democratic Party in Charleston, South Carolina, that's real bent on maintaining that status quo and holding on to those big corporate donors and trying to hang on to that moderate right wing core of the party and keep that in power, then that party is going to take actions that not to benefit certain candidates, but the candidates who fit that model will benefit, right? I would be willing to bet money that nobody sat down and said, how can we help Mike Bloomberg in this debate? I know we'll charge $1,700 a ticket, and that means only rich. Nobody said that. What they did say is, how do we stop Bernie Sanders in this anti-billionaire stuff and this eat the rich mentality? And how do we stop that from being prominent on TV? How do we get a room full of people that will create the illusion that the American public as a whole has this gigantic heart of sympathy for the poor billionaires? Well, let's get some people in here who can afford to drop $2,000 a seat. And people who are going to be very angry and feel very attacked every time Bernie says the billionaires, because they're delusional and they think they're going to be billionaires one day and they're not, right? The idea that people are being individually targeted, right? There's another thing that people just love to talk about. Oh, man, you better not, you know. Whatever, you're buying and selling a bag of grass or something over your phone, and somebody starts going, man, you can't do that, don't blah, 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 you can't, you know, and they develop all these code words and stuff, like the National Security Agency gives a rat's ass about your quarter ounce of ditch weed. Really, you think you're that important? Let me explain something to you guys. I have been out here running my big fat mouth for going on 25 years online, and another 15 or another 10 behind that out in the streets, okay? I have no doubt that somebody knows who I am. I have no doubt that I've caught some people's attention. Nobody's breaking down my door. The men in black suits are not showing up at my house to tell me that I need to shut up, okay? You really aren't that important to the people in power, so let's get rid of this conspiracy theorism nonsense and this whole idea that everybody's out to get you and get on with, what's the point? Well, the point is to keep you tied up with silly ideas and paranoid fantasies and arguing back and forth over whether chemtrails are real. And in the meantime, the owners just keep on pumping away. We're going at each other and scratching at each other's throats, and the people who run everything are back there taking us both. That's the conspiracy, okay? And if you want to talk about some kind of organized, formal thing, that's it right there, right? Because those people who have all the money and own all the media companies and control most everything that we consume, again, as I've said so many times before, it is not in their interests for you to be educated and healthy. They need you sick and stupid so that you'll keep showing up to work because you're desperate, so that you'll keep believing the bullshit machine and arguing over irrelevancies. Okay, that's, you know, if you want to look for a conspiracy, that's where I would start looking for it. And that doesn't mean it's, you know, naked guys in the woods out in California or some kind of shadowy organization in the Catholic Church or anything else. It just means that like interests have converged. And as Carlin points out, you know, most of these people, they go to the same schools, they go to the same churches, they hang out in the same bars or clubs, they play golf at the same golf courses. It doesn't require a conspiracy. It certainly doesn't require a conspiracy targeting some fuzzy guy living in Otsego, Michigan. It's dumb. Nobody cares about that, right? I mean, literally, this page that I was referencing earlier, they have fewer people on that page than I have on mine, right? There's like 3,000 people there. Nobody's trying to shut me down other than the people who are afraid of what I'm going to say will get across to you, which is mostly other liberal page owners, right? The people that are running the big clickbait farms and stuff, they have got together. I've got the screenshots and all that other stuff, and I've had people that have participated that have come to me later and said, hey, look, you know, there's these conversations going on about you, and here's who was involved, and here's some pictures of the conversations, right? Those are your real conspiracies, not this nonsense of Facebook is trying to kill Sanders or Facebook is trying to put... No. Nobody is stopping you from seeing information about Bernie Sanders. Okay? So just get over it. And nobody's stopping you from seeing information about Elizabeth Warren or Pete Buttigieg or Donald Trump or anybody else, whoever your favorite person is. Right? They're not trying to stop you from seeing it. They're trying to get them to pay for you to see it. That's the deal, right? If you want to label something as a conspiracy, the conspiracy is they want to make money. And guess what? That's what businesses do, okay? I've said that a million times. And, you know, I guess maybe it sinks in here and there, but businesses don't have a conscience and they're not supposed to, okay? A business is in business to make money. A business is not in business to be a friend to the gay community or to be liberal or conservative or to be left or right or any of that other stuff. A business is in business to make money. So if Lyft or Pepsi Cola thinks that they're going to be able to sell more rides and soda by sponsoring a gay pride parade, they will do that. And then they will turn right around and sponsor, the National Southern Baptist Conference because they'll sell Pepsi. They'll sell rides. They're in business to make money. They don't care about your ideology. They don't care about left, right. They don't care about anybody's rights or anything else except to the extent that it benefits them. And that is the point of business. Okay? That's not the evil thing that you may think I'm making it out to be. That's natural. That's what business does. That's why we have government regulation. Because business does not have a conscience. And it's not supposed to. Right? And so in my little, anarcho-socialist world, my little left libertarian world, the function of the government is to act as the conscience of business and to create the regulations that say, no, you cannot tell children that lead paint tastes like cherry pie so you can sell more lead paint. That's what regulation is for, right? So... I mean, it's all about the money, man. It's not about the ideology, okay? It can become about the ideology when the ideology impacts the money, which is why you've got Mike Bloomberg in the race, because he knows that if the rhetoric and the ideology that Sanders and his base are promoting and energizing rises, he's going to lose a bunch of money. Right? Or he's going to have to spend a bunch of money on things that improve his business rather than putting it in his own bank account or letting it sit in an offshore haven someplace gathering interest. Right? Now all of a sudden he's got to spend that. Otherwise it just goes right back to Uncle Sam and gets destroyed. He doesn't want to do that. He wants to hold on to his money. And I think that's a sickness, by the way. I think it's a disease of thinking, this pathological amassing of wealth. I mean, how in the world does anybody need enough money that they can drop $500 million on a presidential campaign that everybody knows is going nowhere, including the guy running it? It's a $400,000 a year job, man. That doesn't make any sense at all, unless you start to think about what you can do in that job and how you can influence regulations in that job to make you a whole lot more than that $500 million, okay? So when you want to talk about conspiracies and shadowy things and all that else, that's the direction that you want to look in. Follow the money, okay? Because the money is really where things are going to start happening, and that's going to be true. It doesn't matter what kind of country you're living in, what kind of system you live under, whether it's democratic or despotic. At the end of the day, when something is going screwy and hurts the people at large, it's because somebody at the top is making a buck off of it. Okay, and it's the same thing that happened with Stalinism in Russia, right? They call it communism. It's not. They take the words and trappings of communism and they say, okay, we are all blah, 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 the People's Revolution and so on and so forth. That was the big split between Stalin and Trotsky, right? After Lenin died. was, which way are we going to take this? And Stalin said, well, I'm not going to wait for the people to rise up. I'm going to go make them rise up. And Trotsky was more, you know what, let's let this happen naturally. And you know, Trotsky was less into the centralized control and the top-down sort of thing. And so you got, you had that argument, and Stalin won. And so you end up with this power core, of which Vladimir Putin is a relic, right? At the top of that system. Yes, exactly. Exactly. The hackman stops. And how much does this job pay? Nothing, unless you're corrupt. Exactly. Right? If you're going to take the job so that you can go in and manipulate things to make yourself a whole big bunch of money, then all of a sudden it's worth that $500 million to run for it, right? And again, it doesn't matter if it's a democratic system or a republican system, semi-democratic, socialist, communist, despotic, theocracy, feudalism. It doesn't matter, right? What matters is at the end of the day, the people who have the big chunks of material wealth and who are used to having those big chunks of material wealth are going to do everything that they can to hold on to it. And the way they do that is by keeping us sick and stupid. That's the number one tool they've got, is to keep us sick and stupid. Because if we can't, if we don't have the awareness or the language or the reasoning skills to have this conversation, there's nothing we can do about it. Right? If we're educated and we're healthy, if we've got, you know, like they do in Europe, in some countries in Europe, I think Finland has 32 paid days off a year or something like that. And there are other European countries, especially the Nordic countries, are similar. A lot of those places have a month or more paid holiday per year. That's a lot of time for me to sit here and think about, you know, how I want to exercise my franchise and who I want to run this whole show and everything else. And Hackman, it's damn good to see you, dude. I haven't talked to you in about 15 years face to face. It's really good to see you. Thanks for stopping in. Yeah, just again, so I don't want to continue and go off on this like I'm Mr. Wise Guy, because obviously I don't know anything either. I don't know everything either. I'm not a member of the Illuminati. I'm not sitting in on these secret meetings. You know, I don't know what's going on, and I don't even know the secret meetings really exist beyond, well, here's a bunch of rich people and that are going to get together in Davos and talk about the world economy and how they can make it benefit them. Okay. Nobody's in that room going, hey, you know what? Let's go ahead and let 4 or 5 million people in Africa die because that's going to make us money. Nobody says that out loud, and I doubt very many of them think it. They're so far detached from that reality, it doesn't even occur to them. Right? When you're at that level, most of us aren't people. It's like the celebrity thing, right? I've had that conversation before. When you are a performer, when you appear on stages, when you appear on the radio or on television, the vast majority of people out there, what the hell? I'm going to go ahead and tell the story and drop the name because I never have before. So back in the day, Eric Carr from Kiss was very kind to me the first time we met. And I met him a bunch of other times and eventually ended up hanging out around the band for a minute after about a half a dozen shows. And one time after a show, I think it was Muskegon, Michigan. We were sitting around in the bar after the concert. You know, everybody's kind of eating and having their non-alcoholic drinks and all that other stuff. And we were talking just kind of a, you know, roundtable BS session about the nature of celebrity. And Gene Simmons, of all people, which, I mean, the guy can be an absolute dick, but he said this one thing to me and it really, really stuck. He says, the thing you have to remember about celebrity is 97% of the people in that audience that I can't imagine Paul sitting on the mode, right? He's talking about Paul Stanley, the lead singer. And he's right. You know, and I saw it in the wrestling business, I've seen it in the music business, I've seen it in the film business, I've seen it in television. People who are performers immediately become an object and a commodity in the minds of their fans, right? I mean, this is a big part of why Kurt Cobain ostensibly shot himself in the face, right? Because he had a hard time dealing with that. He's looking out into this crowd and seeing, you know, there's like 10% of these people that really get it, and everybody else is just there because they want to rage and scream, and, you know, half of them are homophobes and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, I don't want part of this. I don't want to be part of this. I don't want these people to like me, and they won't stop liking me. You know, it's a real frustrating kind of a conundrum for people who are in performance and who have any kind of personal integrity, right? and we all learned to deal with it. I had some conversations with my friend Holly, who's a writer, and I mentioned her before in this show about, you know, one of the things that I have had to learn over the years is that when I put something out in the world, once it's out there, I've got to let go of it. I can't control it anymore. You know, if you're watching this and you're hearing me say something about, oh, there's a big conspiracy, I can't control that. Right. All I can control is what I'm saying and do the best that I can with my understanding of communication and how people think to try to avoid those errors and misinterpretations. Right. And man, it's been happening for thousands of years. It's the old game of telephone. You can't get away from it. So and now, of course, I've rambled about that so long, I can't even remember why I started talking. Oh, yeah, the wealthy people, right? These cats that are sitting at the top of the pile and looking down, you know, they're not thinking of us as human beings, okay? Bill Gates is not sitting in his home in Redmond, Washington right now, unless I'm fortunate enough for him to be watching, in which case, Bill, send money, please. He's not sitting up there going, boy, I wonder how Windows affects John Henry. I wonder how our next security update is going to affect this person. No, he's not. I'm a demographic. I'm an object. I am a data point, right? And so are you. And so are most of us. And so when you have these people who control billions of dollars or whatever, and let's just take as a, for instance, the sources of rare earth minerals like cobalt that are necessary to make our cell phones and our computers in Western Africa right now, right? There are horrific things going on around there, and not one of us is completely innocent of, you know, partaking in the things that flow from that. Unfortunately, I am not either, right? But do I think that there's somebody sitting in a meeting in Davos, Switzerland, or in some secretive Vatican meeting room going, well, you know, I think we can go ahead and get away with exploiting all these little children and just, you know, letting them die and catch diseases because it'll make us money? No, I don't think that's how they think. Nobody, always remember, man, don't ever forget that nobody wants to be the asshole in their own movie, right? Those people all think of themselves as the hero, just like you do, just like I do, right? And so they're not thinking about, you know, a six-year-old kid who's being beat to death because he didn't mine enough cobalt today. They're just wondering how much cobalt came out. And if not enough came out, they're going to talk to their vice presidents of operations, and their vice president of operations is going to talk to a regional manager, and the regional manager is going to blah, blah, blah. And it's going to cascade down until you get to the guy who's holding the whip and beating the kid out in the field, right? This is not one giant decision that is made at the top and enforced downward. It's a cascading thing. Everybody along the line wants to please the guy above them, and they take more and more extreme measures to do so. And as you get up, you are more and more shielded from those measures and from those realities, just like drones in warfare. Right? We've heard that conversation more than once about how it depersonalizes the target. If you're sitting in a chair in you know, Miami, Florida, basically playing a video game, you're not really feeling the people that you're killing, because that's what you're doing, right? You are killing people. You are killing human beings, and some of them are probably going to be innocent. And so that distance, that separation, allows you to kind of compartmentalize that and keep it out of your mind. And frankly, it probably lowers the PTSD rate. It doesn't help the dead people, of course. It doesn't make it right. But everything is nuance. Everything is you know, everything in the world has its subtleties and its gradations. And one of the things that I really think we need to break free of in order to truly evolve and see genuine progress in the world is we've got to get rid of this binary thinking. Something is good or it's bad. It's black or it's white. It's left or it's right. You're with us or against us. That's just not how the world works, right? Saw the same thing last night in the debate, by the way, with Sanders. And he tried, and it was funny. And I think some people may have been, you know, a little bit turned off by it. I laughed and I thought it was funny because they were on the Castro thing again, right? At some point in the 80s, he had given a speech or something that said some positive things about how Cuba had developed their education and healthcare systems, right? And they asked him about that last night. And of course, he immediately, quite rightfully so, said, yeah, and so did Barack Obama like 4 years ago. So what's the problem? You know? And immediately the audience says, boo! Like he just insulted Barack Obama. And he goes, really? Good for him. That's one of the things that I actually really like about Bernie Sanders is he's a no-bullshit guy, and he's not afraid to say to somebody who theoretically he's trying to gain their support, look, no, you're an idiot. Shut up. So I thought that was pretty funny. But again, it illustrates this, you know, the dangers of black and white thinking, and you see it with the socialism crap and the red baiting and just all this on and on and on. Do you know... every single Democratic president since the Bolshevik Revolution has been accused by their right-wing and Republican opponents of being somehow supported by or working for Russia. It has happened to every single one of them, where it was FDR or you know, Kennedy or Johnson or Carter or Clinton or Obama, and now Sanders, you're getting the same thing. It's just a game, and it plays on that binary thinking. It plays on that trigger and that emotional valence that's tied into those words and concepts, right? And of course, you know, as I've said before, I think the neat and good thing about that is it's becoming less and less effective as time goes on. Right. If you talk to some kid that's, you know, to a kid, right? Yeah. If you talk to somebody that's 25 years old right now and you say, well, Bernie Sanders is a socialist and he took his vacation in Russia and drank some vodka and had some pictures taken with, they're gonna be like, so what? Who cares? What are you talking about? And why do I give a shit? You know, you say that to somebody who's my age, and half of us are going to go, oh, Russia, oh, socialism, that's bad, that's right. And of course, if you talk to somebody who's 75 years old, like, oh my God, it's the Reds. And that's not to you know, segment people by age and pick on people because they're older. I'm almost 50, for God's sakes. I'm in no position to hit on anybody, right? It's about the world that we grew up in and the ways that we were taught to think. And so I had the good fortune of coming up in a post-World War II era where we had started to educate and had been educating for, you know, by the time I was in kindergarten in 1975, this had been going on for probably 30 years or so, where you have government-produced films that are about how to see through propaganda and how not to be manipulated by the snake oil salesman and the manipulators and the agitprop. And unfortunately, that kind of training has declined substantially since I was a schoolboy. It needs to come back. There's no question about that. And these, again, critical thinking skills. And Antifa. Ooh, there's another one, right? Antifa. Anti-fascism. I've gotten into some arguments with people about that. When you position yourself as anti-anything, you are immediately conceding that whatever it is you are anti is the norm. Okay? And so that whole label of anti-fascism, there's no such thing as anti-fascism. I don't care who uses the label. I don't care how long it's been around. It doesn't exist. Anti-fascism is human decency. Fascism is anti-decency. Decency is not anti-fascism. Okay? If you understand that difference and why it's important, you are way ahead of the pack, folks. And again, that's what I'm here to do. That's my purpose in life, is to try to teach you why these things are important and to illustrate to you why these things are important, right? Because now if I'm anti-fascist, and you see it all day long, and it amazes me how often I have had this conversation, right? Those darn Antifa, those darn anti... Well, wait a minute. You oppose anti-fascism, that means you're a fascist, right? No, I'm not a fascist. How dare you? Blah, 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 blah. I'm not a fascist. I'll kick your ass if you don't shut up because I'm not a fascist. That's another fun one, right? Yeah, that's what you're saying, right? If you oppose anti-fascism, you're a fascist. By definition. And people don't even think about it, because they're so wrapped up in the cheering and the making the big noise and the, oh, blah, blah, they're coming to take my guns, or they want to force healthcare on me and they're going to make me be educated and healthy. How dare they, or whatever, right? And this again goes back to that somebody else used a phrase, and I hate that it's not in front of me because I don't want to go dig it up while I'm in the middle of a show. But it was very well said in a much better known quote by Sinclair Lewis, right? The problem with America, and I'm paraphrasing, the problem in America is that there are no poor people. There are just millions. There are a bunch of temporarily embarrassed millionaires. Right. We all think that we're just one more step away, one day away, one magic moment away from being the billionaire class, from being the owners. And so we sit there and consistently vote against our own interests because, man, when I make it big, I don't want to pay all those taxes. You're not going to make it big, man. Neither am I. Neither is anybody else. And the thing about it is even if we do, right? Let's just say, let's fantasize for a minute. Let's say, I get Mark Hamill, Bill Gates, Bernie Sanders, and somebody else to big names, big Twitter names, big social media names to start sharing my stuff just because they like me. Let's just say they organically get behind what I'm saying, and all of a sudden I blow up and I'm viral, and you see my face all over the place, and my website is pulling in $100,000 or $200,000 a month worth of ad revenue. Okay, so let's say, and believe me, that would put me in the top 0.002% probably of AdSense publishers at Google. But so let's say $200,000 a month, I'm making an ad revenue that is $2.4 million a year, right? That's not even touching the top 10,000 people, right? I'm a pauper to those people. That's not rich. It's pretty comfortable, but it ain't rich. To me, it's rich. To me, it's unimaginable wealth, right? I mean, if you handed me $500,000 one time, I would be set for life. I would never have to work again, and I would generate an income with the tools and the things that I can do with that money. I would feel like I had won the lottery, and I would never have to work again. But I wouldn't be one of the rich. It still would not be in my interests to vote in favor of the policies that benefit the ownership class, is what I'm telling you. Okay? When you start looking at a net worth of $1 billion, that's when you're starting to be part of that club. And $1 billion is a lot more than a million. Okay? I mean, it's 2020. $1 million is not that big of an income anymore, believe it or not. So, yeah, it's just, trying to wrap up and clarify and sort out all of these silly things that we do to ourselves. I really think is even more so than, I've gone on a lot about modern monetary theory and understanding how macroeconomics works and where money comes from and where it goes and what it pays for and all that stuff. And I absolutely believe that that's hugely, hugely important for us to understand that. But even more than that, it's important to understand communication, propaganda, what Robert Cialdini called compliance gaining tactics. Hold that thought for just a minute. This book right here, it's called Influence, Science, and Practice. It's by a gentleman named Robert Cialdini. This is the fifth edition. I think it's probably in the seventh or eighth right now. I believe it was in the sixth when I actually went to school. If you don't buy another book ever in your entire life, buy that one. Okay, buy that book and read it and understand it and try to wrap your head around what it's telling you and the tools that it lays out for you, right? Because again, these are just tools. Every conversation fundamentally is an attempt at convincing somebody of something, okay? That's every conversation. Everything, and even non-conversations, non-verbal conversations, right? Everything that we do in a day, whether we like it or not, whether we intend to or not, whether our intent is positive or negative, we're all trying to convince somebody of something all day long, okay? That book that I just showed you and that author will give you some really, really excellent tools to defend yourself against the more underhanded and kind of slippery techniques that are used. And so when you start to understand this stuff, then the red baiting doesn't work anymore. Right? Then the welfare queen narrative doesn't work anymore because you see through it. And you go, well, wait a minute, welfare queens, where's the numbers? Show me this welfare queen. How many of them are there out there? What is it costing us, right? And again, this is one of the things that you know, there's a lot of downsides to living in the world of the internet, but there are some upsides, and one of those is that this kind of information propagates better than it used to, right? And so that's when you start seeing the memes like, wait a minute, you're mad because you're going to pay $36 a year in income taxes to cover Medicare for all, but you're not mad about the $4,000 you're paying to prop up the Waltons and Jeff Bezos? Have you thought about this? And one of the fascinating things is how many people will hear that information and go and just deny it, right? Like, oh, no, that's not what's happening. I'm smarter than that. Get used to the idea that you can be fooled, folks. Get used to the idea that you are being and have been fooled probably for most of your lives. Get the ego out of the way. Stop worrying about whether you feel stupid and start worrying about whether you are, okay? And I'm sorry that that sounds rough, or if it sounds, you know, condescending, and I want to make clear, I did not get to this point in my life by not going through all these things myself, right? I've said that before. I'm a recovering addict, okay? I was strung out on cocaine and other hard drugs for about 12 years up until 2000, and one of the things that you come to understand really fast when you've got a problem like that, as I'm sure anybody out there who's dealt with an opiate addiction can tell you, right? If you're going to be serious and you're going to stay alive, you better get it through your head right now. You no longer have the luxury of bullshitting yourself. You no longer have the luxury of pretending like, oh, I can just do it one more time. I can have just one drink. I can have just one line, because it will kill you. And I really feel like that's where we're at with this information now. And you're seeing it, right? This, God, this shooting in Milwaukee, man. I don't even know where to start with this, and I don't want to go off on it. But the bigger picture of that, right? Some guy got fired and he goes and gets a gun and comes back to the office. What did he do to avoid being fired? Right? What kind of job was this guy doing? How effective was he as an employee? You know, did he deserve to be fired? Because I bet it's going to turn out that he did. I just bet that it's going to turn out that he did. And because we have become so spoiled and so wrapped up in our own egos, instead of going, well, I guess I blew that. I should learn a few lessons and try harder the next time, or do better the next time, or find something else to do entirely that doesn't rely on working for somebody to make an income. He goes and shoots, you know, the last count, it was, I think, six other people. That's where this shit leads, and this is why we've got to stop it. This is why I do what I do. Okay? And I am one of those people. Right? Can you imagine me sitting in a corporate boardroom? I've done it, and it never ends well. It never ends well. Because I you know, I don't pull punches. If I see something that I think is bullshit, I will call it, and I will call it bullshit. And then half the time I come to find out that the guy who's signing my checks is the one who implemented the thing that I just called bullshit. Right? It happens. And again, so it's just, It all wraps back up, you know. I could very easily just curl into myself and feel like the world is out to get me, and feel like, you know, I should start getting a revenge thing going on, or I should be angry about something because they're being mean to me and they're hurting my feelings. Bullshit. It's not about my feelings, okay? I've been fired over other people's feelings, right? That's what happened to that musician's friend. I mean, I sold $2.5 million worth of gear for those people, and then all of a sudden, when they decided to change their job description on me from something that I desperately was behind and wanted to do and that fit in very well with what I thought was the right way to approach things, and decided they were just going to go to a corporate top-down model, I threw a fit. So wait a minute, Patrick Starr, that was a parlor deal, SquarePants. Bullshit. You know, you don't tell me to build my own thing and come up with all these tools and then sweep in 4 months later and go, yeah, well, you did all that work, now it's done. We're taking it away from you and we're going to give it you a worse tool. And when your numbers go down, we're going to blame you for it. Yeah, so I got pissed. And the guy that I got pissed off at was, instead of saying, well, you know what, that's because that is a legitimate point of view. I don't care whether anybody likes it or not, or whether it's nice. That's a legitimate point of view, right? They lied to me and manipulated me and sold me a bill of goods. And I called their asses on it. And so instead of anybody going, oh, well, yeah, we did kind of do that, didn't we? you know, and even if they wanted to stick to their guns and say this is the way it's going to be, they're still. But what happens is the guy that I'm working for takes it personally, right? Now his feelings are hurt and I'm out the door. So, again, we wandered far afield, and again, I want to send out my absolute deepest heartfelt condolences to the families of those the victims of the shooting in Milwaukee today, and also to the family and fans of noted author Clive Cussler, who also passed away on Monday. That was just made public today. It's been a fairly tough week for that stuff. That's the other thing I wanted to mention. I forgot, by the way. Nobody noticed that Bernie Sanders came out last night and said on a debate stage in front of everybody, hey, do you know what? We have more people incarcerated than any other country on the planet, including China. And the first thing I'm going to do when I get into office is legalize pot at the federal level. And I'm going to start, you know, letting people out of jail who were busted on pot charges. He said that out loud. Almost nobody noticed it because we're all busy, you know, going back and forth over the things that the media tells us are important, like who booed and when, and whether Joe Biden is everybody's crazy uncle and if he's going to be able to win and what a great billionaire Bloomberg is and on and on and on, right? Everybody's busy pushing their agenda. Everybody's busy pushing their agenda, and that includes me, folks. And I'm not going to bullshit you about that. I am pushing an agenda. Here is my agenda. Are you ready? And that's another word, right? That same organization I was talking about earlier, talking in one of these, well, you know, I'm cognizant of your agenda, says this clickbaiting jackass who wants to turn everything into a slot machine. Like, what do you mean you're cognizant of my agenda? I just walked in the door. I don't even have an agenda other than trying to inform people, right? So here's my agenda. Here's my agenda. Here's my subterfuge, or my what's the phrase that I'm looking for? Man, I'm getting old. I hate it when I drop phrases like that. My ulterior motive, right? It's not ulterior at all. It's right out in front of everybody. What I want is a world where every single human being has every possible opportunity to live their best life. Okay? That means from the time you come out until the time you go in, you are spending your time finding out what you care about, what you're good at, what you're passionate about, what you want to do with the tools that you were born with, and then we as a society empower you to do that the best you can. Whether it's painting pictures or sidewalk chalk or building bridges or writing computer programs or making music or anything else, without regard to whether it generates a profit for somebody. Because there is a lot of value in this world that has nothing to do with material wealth. Okay? There are very few artists out there, and if you go back to prior to the middle of the last century, there are almost zero artists out there, or creative types, whether they be music or, you know, sculpture or painting or whatever, who got into it because it was going to be lucrative. They got into it because they loved it, because that was how their heart moved them. We should be empowering those people. Of course, I have a bias there because I'm one of them, but that doesn't apply any less if you love working on cars or dreaming up, you know, the structure for power plants, whatever. Maybe you really love crunching numbers and you're really good at that. Awesome. Let's make you the best number cruncher ever. Let's make you, not even ever, let's make you the best number cruncher you can be. Let's give you all the tools that you need to be a great accountant. Let's make sure that you're not losing sleep and failing to learn the things you need to know because you're worried about how you're going to eat tomorrow. Let's make sure that you're able to make it to your classes and attend and do your best and stay focused because you're not sick. You're not worried about where you're going to live. You're not worried about how you're going to get to class. You're not worried about how you're going to call your classmates to participate in a group project. Let's make sure you have everything you need to be the best you can be. That is my agenda. And to me, the first part of that is the education, understanding, literacy, media literacy, understanding the media we consume up to and including this show. Understanding political literacy. That doesn't mean you have to be a political scientist. It means you do have to understand what words really mean, like socialism and communism. What you have to understand where benefit comes from. Why do we have government? Right? I've written about that before, and it always pisses people off. This whole idea of anarchy doesn't exist. Cannot exist. Anarchy can't exist. Not in the way these people mean it, right? Because what they think they mean is they're completely free of any kind of government oversight and blah, blah, blah. Here's the news, folks. If there are two people and they agree not to kill each other, bam, you just created two governments and an international trade agreement. You can't escape it. Not if you're human and living anywhere near any other humans, all right? So drop that fantasy. Lose it, okay? Start focusing on what's real out there. Start focusing on what we can really do. Because what you're really saying is you don't want the government to tell you that you can't smoke pot or marry four people or whatever. And by the way, here's a big surprise for you. I'm actually on the Utah Republican side for once. Because I absolutely believe that if you want to marry two or three or five or ten people, you have that right. As long as they're all adult consenting adults and everybody's into it, fine. To me, that's no different from the perspective of government. That's no different than a business, right? It's just a contract between people who agree that this is what we're going to do. We're going to work together and exchange sexual favors and cook for each other. And we're going to call it married. Okay. So, yeah, that's I thought I'd throw that out there just because it's probably the first time in my life I've ever actually agreed with the Utah legislature about anything. And again, that goes back to that anarchy thing, right? This whole idea of, oh, well, and the problem with that is, okay, why is it important? Why is it important? Why is it important that you understand that? Because now if you're still stuck on that, oh, well, I don't want the government telling me what to do. Now here comes, David Koch, who ran for president or vice president on the Libertarian Party's ticket in 1980, right here, he comes and saying, well, yeah, that's right. Government should just keep their nose out of it, and that's why they shouldn't regulate business and industry. Uh-huh. That's why I should be allowed to pollute the air that everybody has to breathe without caring about the effect that it has on the world or whether it's sustainable, because that darn government, anarchy! You get played if you don't understand the words that you're using. You get taken advantage of if you don't understand the words you're using. And so that is really, that's my hidden agenda. That is my ulterior motive. I am out here trying to help people think a little more clearly and a little more carefully about the things they see and do and about who is trying to get what out of you when they are talking. Okay? And with that, I have got ish the hour mark. I've got 8:57 on my clock. I am going to go ahead and call this a night. I do want to thank everybody for tuning in. And those of you, of course, who will be listening later on the podcast. Don't forget, I am here more or less every Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time live on YouTube. Please stop by and hang out and throw me some comments and all that good stuff. Do keep in mind that the comment system on YouTube is not always really great. I've got a problem with my green screen drop down over there. So sometimes I don't see all the comments or even hardly any of them. Sometimes it doesn't mean I'm ignoring you. It means I didn't see you. So, but with all that said, again, thank you very much and have yourselves a great night. We will see you tomorrow. Hey there, everybody. It's John Henry from johnhenry.us. Thank you for watching and stopping by my YouTube channel. Like the sign says, I am independent media, so I don't have a big PAC or an organization or a nonprofit that is behind me supporting this work. It is all me and it is all you. So if you can help out, you can see the information here at the bottom of the screen that links to my various fundraising and crowdfunding sources, as well as the Facebook page and the Twitter and my website. Share it around, spread it around, and thank you very much once again for watching. Have a great day.